Welcome to the Teach and Tell podcast. I'm your host, Mike Raymer, Executive Director of the Georgia Council on Economic Education, an organization whose mission is to help teachers teach economics and personal finance. Come along as we spend time with some great teachers to learn more about what it's really like in the classroom. Today's guest is Rebecca Blankenship. Rebecca, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your teaching career.
Well, this is my third year teaching. I am a teacher at Berkmar Middle School in Gwinnett, and I have taught in my 3 years gifted students, gen ed students, and multilingual learners.
Okay, and what are you teaching this year?
Right now I'm teaching gifted students, eighth grade social studies, so Georgia history.
Okay, and 3 years, do you still consider yourself a new teacher?
It's interesting because I feel like a lot of times I'm considered both new and I have taken on a lot of leadership roles.
Okay.
So in the same day, I can go to a new teacher meeting and also a leadership meeting in the same day. So I'm thinking next year, my fourth year, I feel like I'll officially not be a new teacher anymore.
You'll be a senior, right?
Well, hopefully, yes.
The fourth year.
Yeah.
I look back at my first 3 years. And I'm not going to give the answer what I would say, but how much better do you think you are now in year three than you were in year one?
A lot better.
Yeah.
to put it mildly, I think teaching is an art.
Thank you.
And there's a steep learning curve, and you know people can prepare you so much, and the rest of it you really have to do on the job. And I think even year to year, you know, I've noticed a difference, and I've been fortunate enough to teach, you know, not the same group of students, but the same content every year. So I'm able to find more resources every year, become more comfortable, understand it better myself every year. And that, you know, relates to better teaching.
Yeah. I felt in year three, I really felt like I can do this. Like I've, you know, every year wasn't perfect, but I'm like, I think I got a lot of this figured out.
Yeah, I agree. I think my first year I was holding on for dear life.
Yeah.
My second year, I was thinking, okay, what do I want to be like next year? And this year, it is more natural. It's more autopilot.
That's good. And you mentioned you teach Georgia history. For those folks who aren't from Georgia listening, how much history do you cover in Georgia history? Like, when do you start? When does it end?
Well, really, we start, you know, at European contact. So we talk about the Mississippian Indians that were in Georgia that, you know, encountered DeSoto all the way up to the expansion of the port in Savannah that just happened a few years ago.
Yeah.
So we are covering a lot. We move at a very quick pace. And
yeah,
most of it is Georgia focused. Sometimes we zoom out a little bit to get into more U.S. history, like we talk about Pearl Harbor. But even when we talk about World War II, it's very much still Georgia focused, you know, how were civilians in Georgia contributing to the war effort.
Yeah.
So we do move at a quick pace. It's a lot. Some of it is familiar to students, but the majority of it is new information.
Yeah, I think for my money, eighth grade Georgia history is one of the most, it has to be one of the most difficult courses to teach because there is just so much information that you have to cover.
It is a lot. And sometimes you kind of have this, or I had this expectation, at least when I started, that, well, we live in Georgia. It's Georgia history. They should know some of this.
Sure.
But, you know, a lot of the students that I've taught are either not born in Georgia or not even born in this country. So even topics like the Civil War are, like, you know, new to them.
Yeah.
So it does require a little more or a lot more detail than might be anticipated.
And I've got some news for you. They're talking about expanding the Port of Savannah again.
Again? Well, look, I'm going to Savannah for spring break, so I'll have to ask them.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think they continue to make it deeper because the boats keep getting bigger.
Ships are a hot topic right now, aren't they?
Yeah, a little bit. So, Rebecca, what do you think is the most rewarding part of being a teacher? You're in year three. You've seen some things. You've been through some things. Why do you go home and say, I like this job? This job's rewarding.
You know, I came to teaching later in life, well, later than most people, because I actually came from a family of teachers, and I was kind of growing up in the age of No Child Left Behind, and I heard a lot of complaints from family members, and they come home, you know, and they vent, right, about all the bad stuff. So I was like, well, I don't want to do that. And I kind of came to this profession later. I was really an academic and more interested in, historical research, special collections and archives, and museum work. So when I came here, I was very much focused on like, I'm going to elevate, the level of teaching the school. And quite honestly, no, that's not what I'm focused on anymore at all. It's more about being here with the kids and being some sort of stabilizing force. Because you can teach, you can have a great lesson. Kids aren't going to remember that. And a lot of the times when I think back on my past 3 years, what I remember most is being able to help the families, being able to help the kids, and feeling like you made an impact on someone.
Yeah.
Or, not even a huge impact, just like you made their day a little better. Because I've had a lot of jobs that are amazing jobs. Like, it's so cool. People would kill for these jobs. But at the end of the day, I'm kind of like, did I have an impact on anybody today? Does this matter besides, to glorify myself?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the answer was no. So I like that I'm having impact and I feel like part of a community.
I love that answer because I've interviewed several teachers now, and that theme has kind of run through many conversations I've had, is that the impact you every day, you could potentially, you probably have more than 100 students, I'm guessing. Every day you've got potential to impact positively more than 100 people. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of them come back as well. We, in the middle school, we have a lot of high school kids come back for transportation or to support clubs. So I see the kids repeatedly over the years, and it's, you can see that it's not just a one-off sometimes. It is very much feeling like part of the community.
Yeah, that's awesome. On the flip side of that, what are some challenges that you're coming up against every day or occasionally or not so occasionally?
I think a big challenge for a lot of teachers is what I've referred to as job creep, I think, but just feeling like I don't have enough time to do everything. Because there's so much you want to do. And again, you're improving year to year. So you want to be able to spend that time, your planning period or whatever time it is in the building, getting better, but it feels like you're weighed down by a lot of small things. Did you check this box and that box? And did you write your name on this paper and do this? And again, like talking to my family members who are teachers, at least a generation ago, I'll tell them all the stuff I'm doing in the building. And they're like, well, why did you volunteer to do that? And I'm like, I didn't. That's expected now. You're expected to stay, for this many events a year or to be doing this at the school or be involved in this club. And it does take a lot out of you, and it can be a big commitment.
Yeah. That's another thing that's a common theme for a lot of folks, the word time. Like, if I asked a lot of teachers, if you had one more thing, what would it be? It would be more time.
Yeah.
So I think, the
or
general
even
public
more control over our time as well, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of the folks in the general public just don't realize all the extra things you do as a teacher. You just don't walk in and start teaching. Like, there's all this
exactly
stuff swirling around you all the time. So if you could make a change to teaching, would it be somehow develop more time for teachers or something else?
I would love that.
Yeah.
I would love more time for teachers. But again, like I think, like I said, just having maybe even more control over that time. I feel in a lot of professions, there is this idea of if I can't see you doing work, you're not doing work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think trusting teachers a bit more as professionals would go a long way.
Yeah. Okay. How about a favorite teaching memory? I've only been in it for 3 years, but I'm sure you've gotten many.
No, I mention this to people all the time because this is the first time as a teacher, I was like, oh, I think I understand this teaching thing. It was January, so the beginning of second semester, my first year teaching. And I was doing basically I had to teach about Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois.
Okay.
Which is a very abstract, we're talking about their ideas. It's this abstract concepts about, a life and a time that a lot of these kids don't understand. And I remember being in college and being like, do I understand this right? So I don't know how I'm gonna teach a 13-year-old this.
Mm-hmm.
But we were doing a grade replacement project basically on that standard. And I had these two kids there, and they're kind of in different places intellectually, academically, but I was able to kind of help them help each other, kind of having that moment where I can take a step back and put more of it on them, you know, giving them that rigor. And they actually created a poster kind of summarizing these two men and creating almost like a poll for their fellow classmates to kind of weigh in on, you know, who had the better idea. That's how we pose it a lot. Right or wrong, that's how we pose it a lot, is who had the best idea for African Americans at this point in time. And they were able to understand the information and engage other classmates. And actually, I still have the poster in my cabinet because it's really important to me, because it just reminds me of the first time I was like, oh, I get it. It's not about me standing up and talking and trying to, you know, fill the cup. It's about giving them the tools and helping them help each other.
Yeah.
So that was an important memory for me.
I was going to ask you if you still had the poster, and I knew the answer would be yes.
In the cabinet right over there. Yeah. I've kind of put it away because kids aren't the most gentle with stuff in the classroom, but I still have it.
So that day when you went home from work, how great did you feel?
Oh, I felt great. I felt great. And I actually had all my class periods go out in the hallway. I put it in the hallway. It was actually part of our school's Black History Month door decorating contest as well. Mm-hmm. So I had it out in the hallway and I brought all my classes out, made them, you know, read and check off which side they agreed with. And there were other teachers and other kids in the hallway, and I pulled them over. I was like, look at this. And in the class period the two boys were in, I put them right beside the poster, and I was like, look, everyone, Joshua and Dawson made this. Look at, oh, and I was very excited. It was more proud for them in a weird way. And again, that's that kind of what I was talking about before, feeling like you're supporting someone else and feeling good about yourself by making other people feel good.
I love your point you mentioned a second ago, like that when you realize as a teacher, it's not necessarily about you, it's about them and helping them do what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wish we could bottle that and teach that in every college of ed in the country and sort of, so you knew going in, this is what it's about. It's about the students ultimately. That's mm-hmm. great. The next question, you might want to like not even answer this one because it potentially could be quite a few years away from you, for you. But can you envision a time when you do retire, whenever that would be, whether it's in 27 years or
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, what do you think you want to teach on your last day?
I think, okay. So before I even started teaching, I went on a little road trip to Warm Springs. And,
Can I jump in real quick?
Sorry.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if folks from other parts of Georgia are listening, where is Warm Springs and what is Warm Springs?
So Warm Springs is a rural town in Georgia that, as you might have guessed, has some warm springs mm-hmm. there. And like most warm springs around the world, they have been used for therapeutic purposes. And actually, President Franklin Roosevelt, FDR, would go there to kind of help with the pain in his legs because of the polio that he had. And he became a big part of the community. And again, it's a rural community, so a lot of farmers. And he was actually inspired by what he saw and the people he met there to create some of the New Deal programs. And it's still a major, not a major city, but it has a big hospital. And the springs are still there, and you can actually visit what's called the Little White House, which is where he stayed his house out there when he went to visit the springs, which was quite often for many years he would go there.
Yes. Wonderful place. And when you go to the Little White House, it is little. You're just like, I can't believe the president stayed here because it's in the woods, basically.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So sorry to interrupt you. So there you go.
So I went there before. I knew I was going to be teaching Georgia history. And quite honestly, I didn't know a lot about Georgia history, even though I took the class in eighth grade and grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to do a little a refresher course. So I went to Warm Springs, went to the Little White House, went to the pools. And I had actually beforehand, because I'm actually a giant history nerd, gone and found a lot of, you know, primary source photographs taken at the Little White House or at the pools, and was kind of wandering around with them and kind of, I don't know if you've ever seen this online before, but people like hold out a photograph on top of a landscape and see where it fits in.
Yes.
So I did that. around Warm Springs. And I just took a bunch of pictures. I had fun, you know, seeing the museum and like the car he drove. And I just kind of put it together as a little at the end of a lesson, because the lesson we had on that, to me, in my mind, I was like, this isn't a whole class period. And my school preaches bell to bell instruction.
There
I
you
was
go.
Like, I'm gonna add something. So I put together this kind of compilation of photographs. And at this point, the kids had learned the information so they could notice things as we were going through. And it's just a fun, almost like back and forth conversation I'm having with the kids. It's not about just me up here preaching. And I think that lesson I have fun with, and the kids have fun with it. And it very much relies on the art of teaching, about having that conversation back and forth. And it's different every time I do it, depending on what the kids are interested in. A lot of kids are like, well, if his legs don't work, how does he drive a car? And I was like, well, I know. I was like, here's a photograph of the inside. And I, you know, I can get my jokes in there. There's a picture of FDR in his car in front of the little White House. And I'm like, look, just like men today, he loves taking a picture with his car. Here it is. And
there you go.
And the kids have a great time. And we talk about like the sniper towers around the little White House. And I tell them, you know, this is where the Secret Service showered and ate their lunch. And we just have fun. It's a fun, lighthearted activity.
Could you ever get away with taking a field trip there, or is that just too far from Gwinnett
I
County?
think it's too far for us,
Okay.
honestly. It'd be a few hours. I'm not sure it's plausible. But that being said, actually, the math teacher on my team, he grew up around there. And he went to the little White House in eighth grade, and he still talks about it. He's like, oh, it's amazing. I wish we could take the kids. That would be fun.
Yeah. I took my son there because the springs themselves at the time were only open like twice a year, I think. And one of them was Memorial Day. And my son was 4, but you had to be like 6 to swim. So
No.
I took him down there anyway, and they let us in. And we were in there, and it was just like this. I'm in the same place as Roosevelt. Like, just. And there were a lot of people there that had clear, they had ailments with their legs that were still kind of using the restorative powers.
And that's one thing I do point out, you know, when in the photographs, the primary source photographs we look at, it's like, here's the president just in a pool with a bunch of random people.
People.
Like, you know, to kind of drive home that effect that, you know, being in this rural area really impacted him, and he was really interacting with these people. It wasn't, you know, how you see a lot today where there's security and space. And no, he knew these people. This was his community.
Yeah. And again, just such a rural place. It's fascinating. I love going down there. Very, very beautiful part of the state. All right. So Rebecca, shifting here to sort of resources, you mentioned an actual place that you went to. Can you name some resources that you find helpful in the classroom that you might think would help other teachers?
I have to admit, I'm a bit of an old school kind of teacher that I like. I don't do so much online. One thing I do really like, though, is there's this website. It's called Wheel of Names, and it's exactly what it sounds like. You know, if you've ever been anywhere and they're like, spin the wheel, you know, one of those things. This is a digital version of that. And you can like save your class roster, which is good for me because, you know, I've got 100 some kids. They're all in different classes. So you can split them up and you just pull the wheel out and you click it and it spins it up, picks someone's name. And I like this because no one can go home and say, Miss Blankenship's always picking on me. And she's, you know, and the kids love it too. They'll start chanting. They're like, bring out the wheel. Let's get the wheel. And they have fun and they like to guess who it is. And, you know, if they guess right, it's a big laugh. And, you know, it makes it lighthearted. And also it gives kids time. They know what the question is coming. Takes a few seconds for the wheel to spin so they can prepare themselves, you know, if it's them. And I think overall it's been, you know, a pretty useful tool for me.
Now, the first time you saw the Wheel of Names, did you think it would be so awesome as it turned out to be?
No.
Yeah, that's
Quite
what
honestly, I was like, I am so tired of these kids saying I'm picking on them.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm tired of it. No. So I was like almost kind of doing the wheel in an act of defiance.
There you go.
Like, I dare you now to say I'm picking on you. But I had no idea they would be so excited about it.
That's cool.
They
And
really
then,
are. Sometimes they'll just ask, like, take out the wheel, Miss Blake. Let's get out the wheel. And I'm like, okay.
You could just say, blame the wheel. It wasn't me.
Oh, that's what I say. The wheel knows no right. It knows no wrong. It knows no sin. The wheel chooses blindly.
Yes.
Except what the wheel says. And they do.
The wheel. That's awesome. That's a great tip. And do you ever do have like, all right, I have one candy bar. We're going to spin the wheel. Boom.
Yeah. Well, I use, you know, I do have some treats. I have some candy treats. I have some like stickers and stuff. That's amazingly motivating. I think all teachers know. So we'll throw that out. Sometimes we'll play like review games. Like we have a lot of Kahoot review or GymKid. And if kids get on the podium, they can get, you know, like a little fun size piece of Snickers or something. We do that. They get excited, but then you get the, or at least I get the Miss Blankenship. I picked up a piece of trash off the floor. Can I get a piece of candy? I'm like, no.
There you go.
No.
So kids still like stickers?
Everyone likes stickers.
Thank
I started
you.
Giving stickers out to my family as like a form of positive reinforcement.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Kids love stickers. It's like a law. No matter what
age
they are.
And you can get them real cheap as well, which is nice.
Yeah. Occasionally I would put little, like the star stickers you get like on kids' tests and stuff, and they would just be so happy. It's like, it's
Oh,
a
yeah.
sticker. Okay.
Cool. Like we had a test today and I had a few kids that improved a lot. I was very proud of their progress. So we have some stickers. I have some stickers with like really bad puns on them, like hot dog, what great work. And there's like a picture of a hot dog. And I like to give those out just kind of unexpectedly. You know, if they're feeling proud of them, I don't have to, you know, make a big deal in front of other kids. I can just give them a sticker and be like, great job.
Nice.
And they get it.
Yeah, it shows that you care. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So last question, which is the big one.
Okay, I'm ready.
Some point in time, Hollywood's going to come knocking. Atlanta's ground zero for movies these days. They're going to come knocking. They're going to want to make a movie about your teaching career. Who plays Rebecca Blankenship in the movie?
I mean, I feel like there's only one right answer to this. No matter what you look like or who you are, what your gender is, because Meryl Streep can play everyone.
Yes.
So I feel like Meryl Streep is the correct answer.
And she would nail it, right?
She would. She nails everything. So
yes. No matter what
I feel
accent,
confident.
What state you're from, she could pull off your accent. It would be wonderful.
Of course. I think she could pull off my multiple accents. I've lived a few places. I've had a few accents. I think she could do them all.
Definitely. That's a good answer. Someone else said Meryl Streep at some point. I think it was like their second or third choice, but they're like, yeah, Meryl Streep. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
She can play anything, anyone.
Great. Awesome. So Rebecca, I want to thank you for A, joining the podcast, and B, for being an amazing teacher.
Well, thank you. Yeah,
yeah
thank
I'm,
you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm excited to talk to young teachers who are still kind of new to the profession, who like it. You clearly like your job and are doing great things to help your students. It makes me happy because I know that we need more good teachers out there, and you're one of them. So props to you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there's more to come, and it's interesting because, you know, I've only been at my school 3 years, and there are definitely, I would say, a lot of people, even on my team, actually, that are younger than me and have been teaching for less time than me. So there are people coming in. Yeah.
That's good. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Teach and Tell podcast. Help us spread the word and promote great teachers by giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Mike Raymer, and I'm here to remind you that econ is life.